This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
It's Hoffman's show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app, and we're streaming live on YouTube too at the Team 980. We're leading you into Nats baseball, so shorter show today. We're done at 6:15. We'll talk a little NBA on the way out, preview the night's games. We'll also get into our non-Commanders-related draft thoughts, winners and losers. What do we call them, Anthony? We don't like winners and losers because we don't know who's winning and losing a draft for years. But hat tips and head scratchers,
I think, sir.
Is what we what we decided we're going to call that. So we got hat tips and head scratches coming up at 5:30. But right now, I had the great fortune of the lovely and talented Sam Fortier coming over to my house where I have many microphones, and we sat down in front of two of them and discussed the RFK situation for the Commanders. And we started off by kind of peeling back and relooking at how we got to this point, which is where we will start the conversation. And then in part two of our conversation that you'll hear tomorrow, we get into some of the biggest questions moving forward. The full thing will be available uninterrupted in our podcast feed and will also be available on YouTube at Craig Hoffman and at the Team 980. But part one of my chat with Fortier right now is today's edition of Not My Beat.
Today's top story from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
This just in.
Not My Beat.
Why was this a story that you wanted to cover? As someone who, you know, obviously the Commander's beat, this is a huge story. You guys have so many different people at the post that can do football and non-football things around this team, and you have been on this story from go. What is so fascinating to you about this that you wanted to sink your teeth in and be a part of it?
Craig, I appreciate you asking, man. Like, it's just something that 3 years ago, I remember, you know, they started talking about Prince William County and we're going to go down there. You know, this was under the Snyder ownership. I just, like, it was my assignment one day and I kind of got fascinated unspooling the thread of the intersection of business, politics, and sports. I think really interests me because it's like, okay, we're talking about the mayor's budget and how much taxpayers are going to have to pay. And I know that a lot of people are like, that is so boring. Please don't talk to me about that. But to me, that is just as fascinating as like Terry McLaurin, how do you stack a receiver and or how do you stack a DB and like win the hand fighting early so you can win down the field late? It's just how things work, and it being a field that I was not, you know, super familiar with. It was like, you know, you'd read one article and then you'd be like, wait. So I'd ask a couple sources like, hey, am I reading this right? And then it just like keeps building and building.
Right.
And all of a sudden I'm like reading books and then it's like about stadium stuff. And then it's like, I'm talking about the tax code. And then I like feel like I really have a good understanding of the ballpark fee, which is going to be like a huge funding stream that pays for this stadium. And it's like, oh, I just like.
And next thing you know, you're on Capitol Hill.
And exactly. And then you're like in these meeting rooms and you're like, you know, AOC is walking by or Steve Daines is walking by and you're like, oh, like these are the people who are like, you know, making real decisions for like our country. And it's just, I don't know, like as a journalism nerd, like trying to figure things out, it just was a challenge and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think it's fun. I am a political junkie. Like I enjoy listening to, you know, podcasts or reading stuff about what's going on. And so I think it's important because it explains how the world works. And I think this is one where you take some of the traditional left-right out of it in a lot of ways, especially in a city like DC where everybody's got a D next to their name anyway, and they're still everyone fighting. And it's like, oh, nope, same interpersonal, same like whatever, but this is not necessarily a traditional left-right thing. And I think because of that too, with our current political climate being so antagonistic, like it allows you to talk about this stuff and look at it in a way that if this was, I mean, even when it was still in Congress, like, you put out something and then there go the comments because everyone's favorite or least favorite politician is involved. And now that it's in the city council, like, I think we really get to see how this legislative sausage is made. And I think that's going to be interesting, eye-opening, and hopefully not terribly disappointing for us over the next 3 months with the negotiations between the team, the mayor, and the city council.
No, absolutely. And it's like how the world works is the perfect way to put it, because to me, it's like, wait, you know, the city council chairman is a Democrat, Phil Mendelson, and the mayor is a Democrat, Muriel Bowser. Why do they hate each other? And also, like, the mayor is working with James Comer, like the Republican chair of the House Oversight Committee, that's talking about DC's crime bill. Like, how did she forge an alliance with a guy that is, like, theoretically, like, interfering in city affairs? And so, like, obviously, I know the answer is politics, but where do they see the advantage in each other was like really fascinating to me to try to demystify. And that, like, her ability to work with Comer was obviously the key, and Eleanor Holmes Norton introduced the bill bipartisan, but it's like, we are not talking about the commanders coming home to DC unless you zoom all the way out. And really, like, back to even when Dan Snyder started having these conversations in 2008, like, this is a story to me that's like 3 decades in the making. And it's a thing that so many people care so much about. Like, when the announcement happened, I know a lot of Commanders fans. Like, that's who I've been writing about for so long. It's like the emotion that people felt and the enthusiasm people felt. It's like, I feel like I just have a much greater appreciation of how we got here because I was able to dig in like that.
For sure. And I think that the joy that people felt this season for those that went to games at RFK back in the day, like, there is some element of nostalgia here that is definitely influencing, which I thought was hilarious at the press conference. Because you might have asked the question even about Harris and nostalgia. Was that you who asked that?
No,
or was
it
somebody else?
It wasn't me. It was someone else. But so, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So he was like, you know, Harris is asked, oh, is nostalgia playing a role here, basically? And he goes, no. And then lists a bunch of things that absolutely fall under the category of nostalgia. And the thing is, though, I feel like with nostalgia, there is an inherent untruth to it. It's like, oh, it's glossy. Your memory is glossier than the reality was. When everyone says the exact same thing, and you have the video to back it up, and you see the stands bouncing, and like opposing players, home players were like, that was the hardest place to play, or the best place to play if you were wearing the burgundy and gold back then. Like, it's just, I understand why it means so much to so many people. And then that's the best memory compounded by the 25 years of the Snyder era and no joy basically outside of 2012. And then you have this past year and it just feels like so many things are going in the right direction, but it is like all that, those good feelings aren't going to be what gets this done. It's going to be the nitty gritty inside deal making and satisfying this politician in Ward 7 and this politician in Ward 5. And what can, and so much of politics is that, right? Like, what can I get for my people? Which I think gets to, or like, what can I do to satisfy my one core belief that made me run for office in the first place? Right. And I feel like that particular thing is like, that's the James Comer angle of this. Like, James Comer is an actual dyed in the wool red right-wing, not right-wing, like, you know, whatever, like right-wing economically, small government Republican. And he looked at the RFK site and said, we're paying for this to do nothing. And that's how Mayor Bowser was able to find the common ground. And I'm curious if there's any other things like from those types of relationships that you saw her work or other things that are either untold or undertold that you thought were interesting from that process. And then we can kind of get to what was announced Monday and where we go from here.
Yeah, I think, like, so my colleagues, Megan Flynn, Aaron Cox, and Paul Kane, you know, a bunch of us at the Post did, like, a TikTok, we call it. Not, like, TikTok the app, but TikTok, yeah, like, the
TikTok
the
Sammy over here. Yeah. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a Post, an actual print article that's done chronologically.
Yeah, exactly. And I think just when you look back, like, her ability to reach across the aisle and figure out that relationship with Comer, and then really, like, to get everyone on board along the way, because they passed it, I think people should understand, they used a vehicle called unanimous consent, which is basically like on the last day of Congress, they put up all these bills that are like super non-controversial, like should we rename a post office in Mason, Ohio? Just things that would pass 100-0. And when they didn't get in like the spending bill at the end of the year, they had to pass 100-0. And if you think about like how complicated and messy and fraught this had been for so long, the idea of it passing 100-0 was far-fetched. It was ludicrous. And so on the last night, you know, you figure out, okay, Steve Daines from Montana, like we have worked with the Wetzel family, the Native American family that's credited with designing the logo. Like you're good. Maryland, who's had a lot of exceptions to this, you're good. Like figuring out all of those pieces, and that took everybody. It was a coalition of the mayor's office, of the team, of the NFL, of, you know, senators themselves. You know, Chuck Schumer reads it at 1:15 a.m. or whatever it was, and he says, like, is anyone opposed? And then no one says anything, and it passes. That's just an incredible moment that, to me, is the political version of Jaden Daniels dropping back and throwing a Hail Mary.
Yeah. I mean, I remember waking up the next morning and just looking at, like, staring at my phone, being like, I'm sorry, what happened? Like, it was dead. I went to bed last night, and it was dead. And here we are. And now,
question for our listeners: which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint: it's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence, it's a commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company, from America for America.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Zoe. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
All of a sudden, that's what, 3-4 months ago at this point, President Biden signs that into legislation. Josh Harris, Roger Goodell are there. Administration changes. And then here we are now with the land in D.C.'s hands. And it was something that I actually wanted to try to understand on our radio show. So Sam and I are taping this on Wednesday, April, what is it, 30th?
30th.
So this would have been yesterday. I had Tom Sherwood, the great Tom Sherwood from WAMU on, who's just legendary political analyst in the city. And I was basically like, you've got Phil Mendelson, the D.C. City Council chair, complaining that, like, I haven't been involved in anything. Like, is this the normal process? Because it would seem like you'd want to work with the mayor's office and city council to do this. He's like, no, this is actually, like, how this goes. The mayor does stuff, puts together proposals, and then they'll work on city council. But there's also been some reporting that maybe there has been some more contact between the team and city council, et cetera. So from the time that that bill passes to Monday's announcement, what was happening that you've been able to, that you either were privy to along the way and kind of keeping track of quietly in your notebook, to stuff that you figured out and along with Megan and your team over the last couple of days? What was the process to get from, we got this approved, we're standing in the Oval Office watching former President Biden sign it, to Monday's press announcement?
Yeah, I mean, they had been discussing, you know, a framework of a deal, like just getting their ducks in a row before that. But I mean, they had been talking to Maryland and D.C. It was between D.C. and Maryland. Like, Virginia is not in play at all. But they're talking to both jurisdictions. And I think, you know, things move pretty rapidly after that signing. You know, we're here just 3 months later. And so I think it's just a conversation of, like, okay, who gets what at what site? What does it look like? How do we do the parking? You know, who gets development rights over this area? How does that area look? It's just, those are all of the things that you're ironing through. And, you know, at some point, everybody has to present their best and final offer. We don't have the details on the Maryland offer. Wes Moore said they made a great offer, as you know, you'd expect an executive to say. We don't have the details on that. But DC obviously comes in with an offer that, to taxpayers, in the end, like if you sort through all the numbers, DC taxpayers will put in just over $1 billion in the end. What did Maryland come in at? I would be, you know, that's obviously something fascinating, because what is the gap between what they're willing to accept? I mean, obviously Maryland has a lot more people, has a much bigger budget, but the pull of DC obviously is very strong emotionally. The fans, you know, we did some polling last April that, you know, fans, Washingtonians, and then district residents in particular, and Commanders fans in particular, wanted the team to end up here rather than in suburban Maryland or Northern Virginia. And so Josh Harris and his crew get to a point where they have an announcement. And I would say real quick, because I was doing a Q&A with some of our subscribers earlier, and people were like, hey, what are the odds this ends up like the Ted Leonsis deal to go to Virginia? Because here we are with, you know, a pep rally-esque press conference between an executive and a sports team owner. Like, why is this one not going to fall apart? And I would say two big reasons. One, Josh Harris and Muriel Bowser have signed an agreement. There is a term sheet. Actually, Craig, I brought something.
Oh, Sam's got props, everybody.
I have props. I brought the term sheet. I brought all of the documents that the mayor's office has put out about this. And so, and you know, I've gone through, I've highlighted, so people can see, like, this is, you know,
that's a real legal document there.
Yeah, it's real. So, and so I would point out that, unlike, not that, you know, this means everything, but like Josh Harris's signature is on this page and Muriel Bowser's signature is on this page. There was never a signed document between Leonsis and Youngkin. And I would also say that Ted Leonsis had put a lot of money into the area surrounding Cap One Arena downtown. You know, like, they have the Monumental Sports Network TV studios. Right. There's a bunch of different things they've done down there. And I think that Northwest Stadium is a clearly worse fallback option for Josh Harris than Cap One would have been for Ted Leonsis. And so,
I actually don't think, for whatever it's worth, I think Monumental pulled the Virginia thing to get DC to the table. And that might have been a feature, not a bug, of not having a signed agreement.
I disagree with that. Like, going through the whole reporting process, I don't think that's the case, but obviously, like, they ended up with something that they wanted anyway.
Yeah.
Whereas I think that Josh Harris and Muriel Bowser are both very committed to making this happen. And so that's not to say that, like, so basically, to me, the question is, can someone on the DC council or another grassroots organization in the city pull a Louise Lucas, the Virginia state senator, who single-handedly basically tanked that deal? Can someone do that in this case? And I don't know.
Well, obviously, they're going to vote on it. Mendelsohn, even though he's the chair, like, he can't just be like, oh, I'm not bringing it up for a vote. So they're going to vote on this. July is the current imposed deadline. That probably holds. But, you know, Mendelsohn's already like, well, it's not enough time to go through it. And the thing is, now, you know, this term sheet, enjoy it while it lasts, because it's going to change. Like, the thing is that now the negotiations start with city council. And this is where things get fun in terms of, okay, we want the current plan is parking spaces that ultimately become parking structures. Well, I've already heard one city council member Charles Allen, tell Grant Danny yesterday that he doesn't like the way that those are done, where the Commanders are going to keep all the money. He's like, no, we should get to keep that money because we're going to own them through Events DC. Like, that seems like a reasonable ask. And that seems like also the kind of thing that you build in if you are Josh Harris, to be like, if for some reason they don't pick up on this, like, we'll keep it. But if not, maybe that's a concession we can make. There are going to be certain red lines where it's like, no, that's how it's got to be. There's going to be other things that are negotiable. As you've gone through this stuff, what are some of the things that stand out to you as maybe the most contentious pieces that will be discussed and perhaps tweaked over the next 3 months as city council and the Commanders and the mayor's office all try to come together on a deal that gets 7 votes on city council?
The number one most contentious thing is going to be just over $1 billion of taxpayer money, because when you look at the comparison, I know that, you know, other jurisdictions have done more, but and I know that, you know, their big talking point is $2.7 billion from the team is the largest private investment in the city's history. And I know that that's their big talking point. But I still think that there are some council members, Charles Allen included, who say, like, why are we spending $1 billion? Like, why are taxpayers spending $1 billion? And that's still going to be an issue. Phil Mendelsohn, the chairman, has long said, we would love the stadium there. We would love development there. But I do not support taxpayer funding for a stadium. And a lot of people say, like, why should I give a tax break to a billionaire? That's going to be the number one contention. And then also, I would say probably second is, you know, how many events does a football stadium have? We need more housing in this city. And, you know, the Commanders are going to come back with, hey, the stadium only takes up 16% of the site. It's a large site. It's 177-acre site. Like, that's going to be, I think, the fight. And ultimately, it's going to be up to the council and the citizens to decide, like, is this worth it? Because I think that, like, the thing is that a lot of people understand that stadiums in general, stadiums specifically, football stadiums, do not deliver the economic return that the studies say they do. Or, you know, that the city-funded studies find, yeah. Right? But, you know, I've seen, like, in the chat, I've gotten emails about it. Like, there are some citizens who say it is worth the cost because this will be a national stadium. If DC wants to be a big time stadium, why are we having the World Cup here and there's no games played in the nation's capital? Like, that's right. Embarrassing. And so, you know, I think that it's really just going to come down to what can the city council accept? What will citizens accept? And that's going to be a huge sticking point to me.